to another episode of the Speaking the Lawn podcast. My first episode of the Speaking the Lawn podcast, but Zach, good job with the inaugural episode of our new name. Once again, my name is Pierce, and once again, I've got Zach and Ben with me today to talk about the Who's. Zach, how are you?
I'm good. We got impatient with the first episode of Speaking the Lawn. Probably could have planned it better, but
no,
it was good. It was fun.
I feel like starting with lacrosse is on brand for us.
Yeah,
we'll talk more about basketball, but we're like the ones who talk about lacrosse out there.
Yeah, there's no one corner. Especially because like the national lacrosse landscape, like no one cares about UVA
like
for some reason.
Teams.
Well, there's that. Well, it's eight teams, and then it's like, for some reason, UVA, I don't know, maybe I'm just biased, but UVA doesn't get the national
love. It's because all the talking heads are Hopkins and Duke guys. And
exactly.
It's
the lacrosse media mafia.
Which is why I'm taking over, which is why I'm infiltrating it.
But don't worry, listeners, we're not talking about lacrosse today, so you don't have to hang up.
Tune out.
Hang up refers to back when phones were physical entities on walls.
Like they had the cords.
And you would literally hang the receiver up on the phone. So,
I actually never thought about the calls.
That's where
the
just text. Yeah.
Okay, Ben, how are you?
doing tremendous, Pierce. It's gorgeous in Charlottesville today. Nice and sunny outside. Again, perfect day to be sitting in my basement while it's sunny outside. While my fellow students frolic on the lawn and enjoy Mr. Jefferson's University, I am in my basement ready to talk about Virginia basketball.
We appreciate the sacrifice because, you know, the airwaves need our thoughts.
They do.
There's a lot to talk about. It's not a normal April. There might never, ever be a normal April for college basketball ever again, which is fine. I'm not hating on the portal or the new rules. I think in general, they are largely student athlete beneficial, but it means there's always going to be this craziness right after the season, and our Virginia Cavaliers are right in the thick of that craziness, both on the men's side and the women's side, though the women's team seems to just get good news over and over, which is great. The men's team, on the other hand, so far just bad news. Good news if you're thinking maybe some addition by subtraction. I don't know, but then Mitch, there are people out there saying, you know, I would say fresh start in some cases is good news. You know, the ability to bring in some experience yet new to UVA depth is good news, hopefully. So that is all to say, Zach, when we look at the roster and the surprising or unsurprising movement away from coming back next year, there's a lot of holes to fill for the men's team and a lot of opportunity to do so with the portal craziness. So let's run through some names. Let's talk about what's missing. The clear answer, of course, is forwards. Who is going to play in the front court for our ACC co-champion defending co-champions next year? Who's going to be on this team?
So I mean, obviously you have Ryan Dunn coming back. He's the only returning player who in the front court. You have obviously Blake Buchanan, class of 2023, who just actually had a really great weekend doing like some Nike USA event. Something like Bronny James was impressed by him. I think he is sort of like that your typical like Bennett sleeper big, sort of like maybe in a Momedy role. Actually, no, Momedy was actually very highly rated, so that's wrong. But in my head, I think Buchanan, there was sort of an assumption, I think, maybe when he committed that he would probably redshirt because you'd bring back Trout and you'd bring back Shedrick and you'd have Dunn and you'd maybe bring in a transfer at that point. I think right now the assumption is that he will not be redshirting. Probably everyone's feeling a little bit burned by the whole let's redshirt the guy from the Northwest part of America.
No more redshirting ever again.
And I just think that they're going to need him to play, and I think he's probably going to be capable. So that's what they have on the roster. They have Ryan Dunn and Blake Buchanan, both very good players, but obviously very young, very green. The most prominent name that they're involved with in the transfer portal who visited this weekend is Jordan Miner, a 6'8", typically a forward out of Merrimack, that's what it is.
Yeah.
sort of a bruiser type of guy, athletic, brings a lot of sort of defensive knowns. He's disruptive. He can block shots. He has good hands. You know, you could easily imagine him in a Bennett defense playing a small ball five as a guy who's going to hedge out on the perimeter, provide some sort of rim protection as a slightly undersized five. He's offensively, he's basically a guy who plays within 5 feet from the basket. He has a jump shot. He took, I think, like 9 threes last year, but he was like 1 for 9. That's probably going to be a similar thing at UVA. So like he was like a 55% free throw shooter, which isn't amazing. He also got to the line a lot. So sort of a good thing and a bad thing there a little bit. But he's capable as a finisher. If you get, you know, we can talk about this later. If you get Reese Beekman back, you have Dante Harris, you have capable guards who can get him the ball. He can be sort of a, what we thought we wanted out of Caden minus some of the ceiling, and just be sort of like a guy you can count on.
Well, that's an interesting guy that you compare him to when I'm thinking like, he like my wrong gut reaction was like, oh, he's like a little bit taller than Jaden Gardner, but he's a completely different player.
Completely
like,
different.
He's
prospect.
Not going to be pulling out those turnaround baseline jumpers.
Yeah, no.
Like Gardner, but yeah, Caden, another departure.
It's not a by no means a perfect comparison because Caden provides a level of rim protection that Miner can't scratch just because he's 3 inches shorter and
right.
doesn't.
Caden
have
has many inches on Miner.
Yes, right. So like, and probably, you know, you would like to have a player bigger than him on the roster that isn't Blake Buchanan. That guy Micah Handlogton out of Marshall was a prospect that I was really interested in. Yeah. He committed to Florida this morning.
Yeah.
As a recording, I don't think that was ever going to happen. He was frankly too good for UVA to go get, probably, or just not the type of fit. UVA doesn't have a great number of success with the 7-1 dudes. That's just sort of a reality. We're utilizing them to full effect, and so
I was gonna say they got playing time to offer in, you know, one of the better conferences in the country.
No, see, that's the
you
truth.
Should be able to get some of these top transfers.
Right. But Miner is probably, I don't want to say safest bet because then that's going to come back to bite me, but he's the guy that I think you're looking at and saying, okay, like this is probably the experienced older guy that they want to bring in to be a 1 year grad transfer, to be a starter for that team. He has UVA in a list of 4 finalists. I can pull it up in a second here, but I'm currently not remembering what the other 3 finalists
Seton
are.
Seton Hall's on there, and Merrimack is a Jersey school. I could be totally wrong.
And then there's FGCU, I believe.
Yeah.
Florida Gulf Coast,
Dunk
and that's
City.
The next visit he's going on. I think
Merrimack's in Andover, Massachusetts. I was wrong.
I think the vibes are good. Like I think, I mean, I don't know if the Jay Willie edit tweet was implying something. He hasn't committed yet. I don't believe, like no silent commitment or anything, but you feel good about him. The other name that they've been most involved with or who's been most interested in them is Robert Jennings, a sort of 3-4 hybrid, from Texas Tech. He's, I believe, 6'7". He fits into a similar role or mold as Ryan Dunn, but he's a different player right now. He's not as athletic. He doesn't have sort of the defensive chops, but he's more polished offensively. He has sort of a little bit of Jaden Gardner offensive game, perhaps with some maybe a little bit more naturally gifted in terms of quickness and what he can do with the ball in his hands. Like long term, he'd be a good piece for them to bring in. They'd be wing heavy with Bond, Dunn, and Jennings, and so you're sort of like, okay, well, they probably need some more height there. But he's like a capable player that you don't say no to bringing in. He's down to just UVA and returning to Texas Tech under their new head coach. I believe he's visiting this coming weekend. And so those are sort of the two big names right now in the transfer portal. There's other names, sort of in high school recruiting. Actually, there was one other player that I'm blanking on right now. I think, those are the two big names right now that UVA has been most prominently involved with and who's been most involved with them. I think you would love to bring in either of those players just because of they're going to help make next year's team better. But at the same time, you're not getting the it, not, neither of these guys are sort of like a blue chip transfer. It's not Trey Murphy here. You're not sort of like getting a guy who's going to turn into an NBA prospect after 1 year in the program. Then again, there's very few guys like that out there. So in Jennings, you're looking at a guy to sort of like raise the floor for next year's team. Or sorry, in Minor, you're looking for a guy to sort of raise the floor. And then Jennings, you want just another body who can play in the front court and then be a long-term building piece. Sort of like Isaac Trout was going to be, but as a different sort of player.
Well, you gotta think they need another center, regardless of how good Blake Buchanan is or
That's the
not.
thing.
So,
And that's sort of where the question mark currently lies is, are you really happy going into the year with a front court at where Minor is your biggest player who's played in college basketball before? And now there's a second wave of transfer portal stuff. Like, for instance, like Cade Shedrick, obviously they're not bringing him back, but he's going on visits in like a week and 2 weeks' time. So like there's more coming and there's more guys at later times, and these are sort of just the early ones that they've been most involved with. But that's probably a, unless you're getting like Blake Buchanan is much, much better than expected, which he can be long term, it's just short term. That doesn't typically happen, in sort of the UVA program or in Bennett's system. So yeah, no, that's definitely a hole.
so Ben, if you want to chime in with any condemnations of Coach Bennett and his system, like Zach seems to do every episode, feel free. But also, just curious, when you look at the roster and what most panics you, is there a name out there that you're hoping to get, or just a type of player that you think they're in desperate need of?
I mean, it's the front court. It's you. I mean, it's really everywhere on the roster, to be honest. Like, you look at eight guys on the roster last season played 30% or more of their minutes. Of those guys, you're getting back two, maybe three, depending on what Reese decides to do. And those two guys are McNeely and Ryan Dunn, who were freshmen and barely played last year. So you're going to be asking them to play pretty major roles next season, almost no matter what. But like the front court, they're just so thin. Losing Trout is and Shedrick is just killer. I think you could have handled if you lost one of them, maybe bring in a depth transfer and then make it work. But losing both, in addition to Cafaro, who like I mean, he had no real expectation that he was gonna stay, but like just a guy who could have been on the roster and isn't gonna be on the roster. It's just hard to see where they're gonna put together a passable front court from next season. And these guys we're looking at, Jordan Minor, I think, is probably the most likely guy for them to bring in. And Minor will be fine in the system. I think what he does fits Virginia very well in that he's sort of well suited to play as a Bennett big, get out on the perimeter, hedge those pick and rolls, recover. I think Tony might like the experience. He's played 4 years. He's a very good defender. If you look at the Evan Miakawa advanced stats, again, these are the ones that have Cade Shedrick as the fifth best guy in the transfer portal right now. Grain of salt, but they have him as the best player in the NEC last season. He was very good, anchor to Mary Mac defense. That was pretty much top of the conference. And like he's just a guy who's a big who's comfortable playing out in space, almost more so than some of the fours they've played this season, and Ben Vanderplas and Jaden Gardner. But that being said, like he's in the NEC, the upside there is going to be a little bit limited, and you're only going to have him for one season. So bringing him in feels a little bit like treading water. Jennings is a little different, where he's sort of that project-y player. But if you just look at his numbers from this year, like he didn't play much. But it's not pretty. He shot 43% from the field, which is pretty bad for a big man. 33% from three, 65% from the line. And a lot, some of the upside I've seen people discuss with him is him as a shooter. And like from those 3-point number and those free throw numbers, like I just don't really see it. I feel like it's weird that they don't have more options. And especially with how much room they have to offer guys to play next year, because they really do, they just have nobody. I mean, it's Buchanan, who was probably, as Zach mentioned, going to redshirt anyway. It's going to be done. But other than that, like, there's nobody. There's so much opportunity. And I do think there's still some dominoes that are yet to fall in the big man transfer
You haven't
area.
said Hunter Dickinson yet, so I mean,
Yeah.
dear
Hunter Dickinson.
God.
Oh my goodness.
There is a 0% chance that Hunter Dickinson is wearing
so
Virginia
Hunter
Tech next
Dickinson
year. I just
isn't
want to
come
say
to
that
Virginia.
now.
So it's kind of a moot point, but oh my goodness, having to root for Hunter Dickinson at Virginia would be the most painful NIT appearance ever. Every single first of all, I can't think of anyone whose style clashes more with the whole Tony Bennett, like humility, servanthood, all that nonsense. All Hunter Dickinson on his, can you imagine him like going on his Barstool podcast every week talking crap and then losing to Virginia Tech like he did with Michigan State this year? Like, I cannot think of a worse player coach fit than Hunter Dickinson and Tony Bennett. And even beyond that, even beyond the off court stuff, which that's the reason I dislike him mostly, but he's not a good fit in the Virginia system. I see people talking about how we would be lucky to bring him in. It's not an efficient style of basketball on offense. I mean, we've seen Jaden Gardner did a pretty good facsimile of what you get from Hunter Dickinson as that big man who you throw the ball to and acts as a post scorer. I mean, he can score. It's not efficient offense. Michigan was an NIT team this year, and Michigan around Hunter Dickinson had a whole lot more talent than Virginia would have around Hunter Dickinson next year. And beyond even the
That's
offensive stuff, Dickinson's big problems are on defense. Did people watch Virginia play Michigan earlier this year? I mean, that was the game where we all came out of it and were like, hey, Reese Beekman might have finally turned the corner getting the basket. But given how the rest of the season went, and again, part of that's due to injury, but like how much of that was just Hunter Dickinson can't cover anyone in the pick and roll?
Couldn't block Kihei Clark's shots.
Kihei Clark was getting past him at the rim. Like, and you're bringing in a 7-1-ish center who has like really slow feet on the perimeter, whose whole defensive scheme was designed to make it so he would not have to guard in space. And if you bring him into the pack line, I'll tell you what, he is not fit to play in the pack line. And if it comes down to Tony choosing between playing a guy who can play the pack line or playing Dickinson, I mean, we've seen what Tony prioritizes. It's going to be defense. It would be a dumpster fire waiting to happen if they brought in Hunter Dickinson.
You say
oh
all this,
goodness.
All I see is the perfect plot to the next Disney Channel sports movie. He comes to learn humility. He doesn't want to come to Virginia, but he's got like a parent or guardian that's like, no, I see where this is going, Hunter, and I don't like it. You're going to go play for Tony Bennett and learn how to be a true competitor. And then he, you know, practices his wax on, wax off.
Mm-hmm.
He gets yelled at on social media and deletes his account and his Barstool, blah, 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 blah. And then rises to defeat Duke. Who's obviously the bad guy in any college basketball Disney film. This is
the
great.
Hunter Dickinson, Caden Shedrick matchup at center.
Exactly. Yeah.
That would be amazing. Okay, now I want him to come.
All right. Now you're on board. All right.
Here's the other thing. UVA doesn't know how to utilize a post scorer. Like it's another, like they don't do it. It's not something that they do.
Anthony Gill.
Anthony Gill was more of a finisher than a post guy than people remember. I'm just like, I was young when
Ralph
I was watching.
Ralph Sampson.
Yeah.
Take that.
So like, it's not something that's really
Mike
built
Scott.
Heavily into their offense, especially when they're not going to, this is another hole that they need to address. They don't really have shooters. Like you can pass.
They didn't have them this year either.
You can
Zach and
more than they will next year as of current roster construction. Well, listen, like, okay, just to bring it in for a second here. Reese Beekman and Dante Harris can be like passable complementary shooters in an offense. But if they're two of your top three shooters, that's going to be a problem. Isaac McNeely, we know what he can do as a shooter. That should not be questioned. Like, that's your 1A. That's, you know, Elijah Gertrude can be a good three-point shooter in college, but that's not where his strengths lie. And that's okay. But for next year's roster construction, you have one guy who you can realistically expect to shoot at 37% on more than two attempts per game.
Right.
And that's a very, very low bar. It's a very low bar.
Well,
and
one potential answer we haven't talked about is from the freshman pool, the high school pool, is the Blue Kane.
Yeah, yeah. He's a talented sort of like combo-esque guard. I believe is he out of Georgia?
IMG Academy. Lighten it up.
So that is one thing that they're trying to push right now is look at how empty our roster is right now. Come in and be a young star, and that's probably the most ideal scenario. Because in like the reality of sort of like where we're at is this team needs like a rebuild. This program needs a okay, we're putting it in the hands of freshmen and sophomores, and we're complementing them with some older dudes from the transfer portal. But like there is a very small percent chance that UVA is a national title contender next season. Is it impossible if the right things fall into place? No. But a lot of things would have to happen for that to be the case. And you have a young core that has the potential to be elite in college basketball. And I think that prioritizing that and not just trying to bring in guys who are going to either play over them or who are going to commit and then prevent younger players from coming in the class of 2023, potentially the class of 2024, maybe reclass guys or just young transfers would be sort of not realizing what just happened with this team, like that sort of has prevented next, like this 2022, 2023 team that has prevented the 2023, 2024 team from being as good as it could have been with Cade and Chedric and Isaac Trout. Obviously, there's a lot more to that. But the reality is that Pony likes to prioritize winning the next game, which is a great trait for head coach. He does it very well. At the same time, there is often a slightly, and this is not the first time I've said this, and it comes off very critical. I don't mean it to be like
Oh, I'm ready for it.
Tony Bennett has won far too much to be criticized to any extreme extent, but
Where's the butt?
they
There it
haven't adequately prioritized the future for the last 3 or 4 seasons. That's just something that hasn't happened. And to some extent, it's just because the young players haven't panned out. And that's not necessarily their fault. Maybe they missed in recruiting. The guys that they hit on didn't end up panning out. And so there just hasn't been a proper sort of rebuild since the NCAA championship. And
Wow.
that roster got like,
Harsh words from young Zachary.
I'm just saying, like, there's for this team to get back to sort of that, like, that upper tier, that top five, top 10, truly sort of looking at a top eight or a top, you know, 1 to 2 seed, top eight teams in the NCAA tournament, making a significant run that isn't wholly unexpected. They need the young pieces within the program to be talented, to develop early on, to get meaningful playing time, and then to be very good in their third and fourth years and play well and sort of, I guess, break out. At the same time, I said this in our original postseason podcast. I said it to some degree in our last episode of Caroline and Paul, where we talked a little bit of basketball. So, if you can sort of utilize this empty roster at this point in time to go get really exciting 2023, 2024 players, that would be amazing. The great players that they're invested in, like, why does Tony Bennett not bring in 5 stars? Because it's really hard to get 5 stars to commit. Like, that's just difficult. It's difficult to get a guy like Blue Kane. It's difficult to get a guy like Jaren Stevenson. But if they could get somebody like that to add to this young core and sort of focus on that rather than bringing in a fifth-year guard who's going to hit 40% from three for you for a year on 3.5 attempts per game and will make next year's team better, but won't actually help you in the long term because you're just taking minutes away from Elijah Gertrude. If you can avoid that and still bring in some sort of contribution to next season while prioritizing or at least not sort of hurting your future potential with the players that you have, that's probably the best case scenario for them. And this next year's team can still be very good. There's a high likelihood that Reese Beekman is back, right? And with Reese Beekman, with Dante Harris, with Isaac McNealy, Ryan Dunn, that's a good core of players. You bring in Jordan Minor, Leon Bond, is somebody I'm forgetting, Blake
Oh, there
Buchanan,
sure is. There's a third year player who has a
Tane
bit of
Murray.
Tane
Tane Murray.
Murray,
It's a solid
who,
core.
according to practice reports, can shoot.
Yeah, I
I mean,
think
that's like what Coach said,
you
right? Like,
could.
why is Tane getting this playing time late in the year when we didn't see him before? He said he was killing it in practice.
Yeah, I mean, he needs to adjust his shooting form a little bit to have it. I'm being too negative, but it's a little bit too much of a line drive, I think. But I think that you're right. Like, with if you can give him 10 minutes a game consistently, not the like fake 10 minutes a game where he gets in scrub time. If you can give him 10 minutes a game, maybe he can be that sort of complimentary player that doesn't necessarily hurt the young guys coming in. Maybe that is something that you look to.
I'll say this about Tane. He's shown more aggression in a good way on the floor in those 10 minutes a game that we saw towards the end of the year than most players wearing UVA uniforms. You
I think
know?
he's going to be a rotation guy this year.
Yeah.
I
I
really
think that's
do.
realistic. Yeah.
Well, yeah, and
Hey.
I don't think it's 10. I think it's like 20, 25 minutes at
Oh, I
least.
could see
I
it for
mean,
sure. I don't know. I
well,
think
what,
that.
like, what are they going to do in the front court? They can play Tane at the four if they need to. I don't see them getting guys. Like, he can play as a blocker or as a mover, and there just aren't that many guys on the roster.
I
Like,
think that's true. I think that they're going to bring in enough players that he isn't playing in the front court. Because at the same time, no matter what, I have more faith in Ryan Dunn to be a contributing 3-point shooter next year than I have in Tane Murray. And what Ryan Dunn gives you on defense and the potential he has, I think is obviously, I think higher than Tane's. Not to say that Tane isn't a capable player. I just mean that I think that you can get that elsewhere and not sacrifice what you sacrificed by playing Tane at the four. And that doesn't mean he can't be in the guard rotation by any means. And I think that that's probably part of the solution they're looking at. If you can bring in a younger player and say, okay, like we can probably rely on Tane for X, whatever minutes you want to say.
Right now, I mean, he'd probably be the fourth guard, right?
If you assume Reese is back, right?
And I
I
would
mean,
assume.
again, that, well, it depends on would Gertrude jump him?
Or, I mean, I think it's entirely likely they find a transfer guard too,
Oh,
right?
no,
Yeah.
that's another
They
thing.
need front court players, but they need another guard.
Especially because if Reese does go, which is possible, you can't go into the year with Dante Harris as your only true ball. Like Isaac McNealy can turn into sort of like a secondary ball handler as his career progresses. He just hasn't done it, and you want somebody who has, and Dante Harris only did it for 1 year at Georgetown. So like you can't go into the year with the potential for it to be Dante Harris, Isaac
Max A.
McNealy.
Smith.
Yeah.
You
Says
chirper,
no.
Virginia Cavalier.
And that's the thing, like they've had interest in guards. It just
Ben says
hasn't
no.
been. It says no. Here's why. They've had interest in guards, but like it hasn't been as concrete or as, I guess, returned. Or there's a word I'm looking here for that I can't think of, but that hasn't been as significant. And I think that makes sense just because it's not as pressing of a need, but it is still there.
Caleb Love.
Lord.
You want to talk
Michigan
about
Wolverine?
worse fit? That
They might play UNC in the battle for Atlantis.
would be
That'd be fun.
pretty funny. No, I know he's already going to Michigan, but still.
It's a sad year for them to have canceled the ACC Big Ten Challenge. You know that would have been sending him back to Chapel Hill. That would have been fun.
Woof. Well,
I
let's.
don't think this is the final version of our roster. I
Yeah, exactly.
Well, I obviously I think they're gonna get someone in the front court, but I think in the back court as well. Like just looking at it, I don't think this is the guys they go into the season with, especially if Reese leaves.
Joe Girard. Just naming ACC guards that I see in the portal.
I think it's either gonna be, but if Blue Kane is next year, right? He'd be on the team. Okay, so I think it's either gonna be him or
Would
it's gonna
he?
be some guy they get in the portal.
He's a
Kirk
23, right?
Creusa.
Kane's a 23. Am I tripping?
You look it
No.
up while I make fun of Kirk Creusa, who would
Didn't Kirk
also.
Creusa commit somewhere?
Yeah, he did.
West Virginia,
West
yeah.
Virginia, where I think you could get Caleb Love, Kirk Creusa, and Hunter Dickinson in a worst fit for Tony Bennett basketball competition. I don't know who comes out on top.
Oh man.
Kane
I
is a
kind of wanted Creusa. I
2023.
kind of like Creusa.
No, God. No.
He's got some swagger.
I'd rather have Caleb Love.
I liked when they'd be on a little run and he just put up a three in transition and clank
I mean, Kirk Creese
it.
is entertaining to watch when he's not on your team and you're not hoping your team wins.
They're on a little run and you jack up a three in transition is not a Tony
Exactly.
We're talking about things that would send Tony Bennett crazy. Yeah, Blue Kane, 6'4", class of 2023, elite shooter.
2023, all right.
He is, yeah, so he goes to IMG. I think he has roots in Georgia. Maybe I'm making that up in my head right now. But
Yeah.
I think Georgia's interested on 24 or 24/7. There's Georgia Tech, Syracuse, South Carolina. I'm not sure how seriously accurate that is. That would be a fantastic player to add to that 2023 class. I mean, if they could, I don't think that they're the favorites by any means right now. I think they're in the conversation. If they could push for Kane in the next couple months and just get a decision one way or the other, that'd be good. Reese being in the draft until May 31st is a that's tough because that's a while that you have to sort of like. It would be better to know one way or the other. It with Beekman, like if you could know that he's coming back or you could know that he's leaving, you could adequately prepare better for that. But that's just the reality of basketball, college basketball right now, and sort of the ability and as players like Beekman should. Can we talk about if we think Reese is going to be back?
I was gonna say, tell us your thoughts,
Yeah.
both of
So,
you.
do you want me to go first, Ben?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right. I think. Beyond just the like the stretch of couple days where it felt like everyone in the program was leaving, like then I was like, all right, well, Reese is obviously gone too. Beyond that period of time, I've sort of been sticking to like a 60-40, 65-35 chance that he comes back, like more likely that he comes back than he goes, just because I think that like while every prospect has flaws that they need to improve upon to be the best player that they can be in the NBA, the stuff that Reese isn't good at is stuff that the league is going to prioritize and that if he improves upon could dramatically increase his stock. For instance, like Trey Murphy needed to show more creation off the dribble, but he's also 6'9", athletic, has hops, and can shoot 40% from 30 feet from three. So like, those sort of like immediate traits that the NBA can utilize in with 18 minutes a game, that's what Trey had. With Reese, like the probably the best NBA comp for him is like a career sixth man type of Patrick Beverley role, where he can come off the bench, be a defensive menace, piss off other guards because he's just in their face and annoying them, probably not with the same personality as Patrick
Yeah, I
Beverley.
don't think so.
But at the same time, like Patrick Beverley is a career 37% 3-point shooter on, I think, like four attempts per game. And obviously the NBA game is 48 minutes compared to 40, but Reese is not at this moment a 37% shooter from the NBA 3-point line on four attempts per game. And so that's a big hole. His shooting form is still kind of wonky. Like that's something that should be reworked. Kihei Clark reworked his form, I think, after his second year. Like that's something that Reese probably needs to do. His injury also means that scouts don't necessarily have the tape on him, or significant tape of him being that explosive guy to get downhill and get to the rim and be the playmaker that we know he is and can be. And so like there's just it's you need to be able to be an outside threat, and Reese really only has one option as a scorer, and that's to get to the rim because he doesn't have a floater in the mid-range. He doesn't have like a Ty Jerome sort of like pull up and pop from 8 to 12 feet away if he's not getting separation. And he can get separation. It's just a matter of in the NBA they're going to go under screens and they're just going to play drop coverage and say, okay, like beat our players that are just as fast and as quick and as explosive as you while we're 5 feet back from the 3-point line. And could he do a two-way deal? Maybe. In terms of the actual like draft, like numbers of it all, you need to be in that top 45 picks to realistically expect to get any sort of guarantee deal. Obviously, only first round picks get a guarantee, but once you're outside of that sort of top 45 and you're bordering on going undrafted, you're most likely looking at a two-way. Maybe like two ways, probably best case scenario. And I think that Reese is solidly right now before the combine, before workouts, he's not inside that top 45. And he's going to get the feedback that says, like, we need to see more of you as a three-level scorer. We need to see a better shooting form that's going to project better to the NBA. Obviously, like Malcolm Brogdon has a wonky form that is projecting quite fine as a 44% three-point shooter this year, but like there's, you know, he shoots it in front of him. Like it's easy to close out to, and that's just a reality that he's going to have to face. He's obviously elite defensively. He's obviously elite as a passer, as a decision maker. But I think that like the value that that provides NBA teams isn't as significant as it would be if he could just minimally improve as a lead ball handler, and that coming back to UVA, even for a roster that's going through growing pains and having to add pieces, he could significantly improve his draft stock to, so that when he actually enters the draft, he's getting more money, he's likely to get a guarantee, and he's likely to set himself better up for the future by waiting a year and trying to sort of like get picked higher or get more guarantees out of what he could get. He could also very well go undrafted right now, and that's
All
not
right,
where you
I'm
want to be.
sold. He should come back.
Ben?
Yeah, I think he's going to come back as well. You hit on a lot of the big points. I think right now in the NBA, he is just not a threatening player offensively. Like, teams will just not guard him. The 3-point shooting, and really the shooting in general this year, wasn't horrible. He finished at 35% from three, 79% from the free throw line. And like, that's it. Those are encouraging numbers. There are guys who would look at those numbers, NBA guys, and think we can make something of this. Certainly players like Tyrese Maxey have had much worse shooting numbers in college and gone on to be really good shooters in the NBA. But I think the issue is more so the form, as Zach mentioned, and also like just the willingness. I mean, we've seen Reeves make strides in being a more willing catch and shoot player and more willing off the dribble shooter, but he's not at all at the level yet where I think the NBA would consider that a positive of his. I think like he'd be one of the worst guard shooters in the NBA. And just in terms of that sort of defensive pest role, I look at guys like DeLon Wright, who have sort of hung around the league as playmakers, not really great scorers, but guys who can sort of hold it down while they're out there and can play good defense. Reese is a little bit smaller than them, which I think matters more in the NBA now. Reese is only 6'3", which is becoming small for an NBA guard. Like, that's smaller than Steph Curry for comparison. And Steph Curry is not an especially like sizable guard. And I think a lot of people think of him as small. And I think Reese's style of defense also isn't necessarily that impact defender almost. I think he's more outstanding as a team defender than an individual defender. A lot of the best plays we see him make are jumping, passing lanes and whatnot. And I think that's a part of a good defense. But in terms of a guy who you're looking to contribute as like a seventh or eighth man, I'm not sure a guy who's a really good team defender has the same appeal as a guy like that, Pat Bev, that DeLon Wright, who can just really harass an opposing ball handler. And I think we saw early in the season, Reese did take some really good guards out of their game. We saw him against Marcus Sasser in that Houston game. And there are certainly things you can look at and say, this is why Reese Diekman should be a first round pick. But I just don't think he's at the level offensively where it can compensate for his sort of deep defense. He's not at the offensive level to be able to tolerate how bad his offense is comparatively and take his defense with that. I also think an underrated thing that we sort of forget about when we talk about Reese is we always look and say, oh, the shot's inconsistent, but he's good at playmaking and getting to the rim. He's good at playmaking and he's good at getting to the rim. He's not a particularly great finisher when he's actually at the basket. Like, anecdotally, we see him miss layups, but also statistically, like he shoots a pretty low percentage at the basket for being a slashing guard, sort of the mold of player that he is. And I do think there was a time in the year, specifically early when UVA was on that really hot stretch, and you saw him put together good performances against Baylor, against Houston, where Reese was really on that first, second round border. And obviously, with the way NBA finances work, being a first round pick is huge. You get a 4-year guaranteed deal, you get $6-7 million versus in the second round, you can get a 1 or 2 year deal, a lot less money, or you can even get a two-way, which is only like $500,000. Obviously, a lot of money, but not quite that life-changing NBA bag that you get if you're a first-round pick. Another thing I've heard regarding other players this season that I think might apply to Reese as well is some evaluators have been saying that next year's draft class is looking very weak. So some guys might be returning to school this year and trying to play their way up into the lottery. I think I was reading that that played a little bit into Donovan Clingan's decision, that center for UConn, who I'm sure everyone saw the national championship game, a guy who probably would have gone in the 20 to 30 range this season, but thinks he can be a lottery pick next year because the class is so weak. So he's going to try and play his way up there. He's going back to school. And I think for Reese, just because there's so much financially hinging on if he can go from 45 to 25, I think he might see that as a leap he'll be willing to take. I bet NBA evaluators are going to tell him, we want to see you run the show for a year at Virginia. We want to see what you look like as someone who's forced to do more offensively. And hopefully, if that skill set can come around, he can become a solid offensive player to go along with a really good defensive player and play himself into the first round next year. But I have a hard time seeing him declaring for the draft this season and being a first round pick or getting the promises he wants. I personally am a little bit surprised, given the way college basketball has been going recently, that he didn't put his name in the portal, because I think he would almost have been better suited as a secondary option somewhere else than the primary option if he ends up coming back here. But I think it's a good sign that it's either UVA or the NBA for Reese, because I don't think it's going to be the NBA. I think he'll be back here next season.
All right. Well, before we close up, I got one more question for you, Zach, about the roster, which is you hear a little bit, what about that Leon Bond guy? And I know we've talked about him in the past, but do a little brief scouting report of if this is a guy that's going to get a lot of, or even just some playing time after redshirting last year, what can we expect? Where does he fit in into what we know about the UVA type of player positioning?
Yeah, so Bond as a 6'5", but his biggest strengths are primarily defensively. He has a solid offensive game and some nice things to build on that he obviously did in his redshirt season. But just to start, I mean, ridiculous wingspan, the type of guy that you think can be an elite wing defender for you, even at 6'5", like he has the Malcolm Brogdon sort of and maybe a bigger or a longer wingspan than Brogdon did. He has really good instincts defensively. He has good hands. He's able to clog passing lanes like that. He's able to guard players that are bigger than him at 6'5". Like he's a potential small ball four because he played in the front court a lot in high school. And so like speaking of his offensive game, he's a capable mid-range jump shooter. It's something that like you look at his highlight reels and you see him taking a lot of pull-up middies. And so he's best as a slasher, sort of utilizing that length, trying to get to the rim, getting his shoulders in front of guys. He's not lightning quick, but he's able to sort of utilize angles, and he's just a heady basketball player. And that's why people had him ranked higher than someone like not that Ryan Dunn isn't a heady basketball player, but he knows how to use angles. Like he was ranked higher than Ryan Dunn. And obviously rankings are bogus and just come down to other weird stuff. But he has a like potentially smooth offensive game if he can sort of round out some areas. Like he's good in the post, for instance, but at 6'5", like how does that really project? Like we're not sure. He's probably You'd want him as a mover long term, rather than a blocker, assuming that, Bennett continues to use sides as much as he does. And I'm sure that what has been probably the primary focus of his redshirt year beyond just getting bigger and stronger and faster has been adding a 3-point shot to his game and adding at least sort of a mid-range shot, sort of like so that he can play in a DeAndre Hunter type role in that 2017-2018 year where he can play a small ball four, be a blocker, and then sort of pop out or drift out into the corner to hit a 16 footer. And I think that in Bond, probably the biggest question of why are you bringing in Robert Jennings is you have a player who's very similar to him in Leon Bond and to some degree Ryan Dunn. But I think that if you're like, man, we want someone in the sort of Robert Jennings, sorry, sort of like, 3-4 mold who can be a plus on defense and give you some sort of like a little bit of some scoring and maybe develop as a shooter on offense. That's kind of what you have in Leon Bond. Maybe he's slightly smaller, but he's been in your system for a year. He's been in your program for a year. He's a really exciting player long term. And like he can raise the reason that UVA's defense hasn't been quite up to par with the sort of like top 10 efficient defenses that Bennett had from 2014 to 2019 is they just didn't have the individual elite athletes and sort of like the guys with the great defensive instincts. That's what Leon Bond has. That's what he brings. And what, you know, whatever else you get on offense from him beyond the game that he sort of had coming out of high school is gravy at that point, because I think that he can be that elite on defense. And a lineup that includes him, Dunn, Beekman, potentially Minor, Gertrude, like, it might be slightly undersized, but sort of the quickness, the athleticism, the length, and the defensive IQ is tantalizing. That's why I tweeted out at midnight last night that UVA can be a top five defense team. And I mean adjusted defensive efficiency, not just points per game, because points per game is another bogus metric. And so Bond is an exciting player. It'll be curious to see how well he can contribute on offense next season. And I think that that will play a large part in the minutes that he gets. If he can add a 3-point shot, if he can do that consistently to some degree, he can play over a Tate Murray, you know, because he has the defensive chops to sort of, you know, bolster your defense, especially off the bench.
All right.
Yeah. Wow. So fun player. It's why this young core is so exciting, is because you have guys that are elite at certain areas. You don't just have like good players who are sort of like good all-rounders. It's like, no, like Leon Bond is elite defensively. Ryan Dunn is elite defensively. Isaac McNeely is an elite shooter. And if you can take the weaknesses that they have and sort of make those just not maybe sort of strengths, but just not weaknesses anymore, then you can build a roster that is elite, because you have all these sort of pieces that fit together. It's why it's a shame that they lost Isaac Trout, but you move on.
Speaking of elite traits, Leon Bond is a elite pregame dunker. People thought Ryan Dunn was good last year. Oh my goodness. They're going to be in for a treat with Leon Bond.
And he's just like a good dude. Like I haven't had any.
He's going to be the face of the team quickly.
He's the charismatic one.
If you watch
like the social media stuff or the like, you know, asking him questions at JPJ on the sort of like does a straw have two holes or whatever, he's the guy that's like they show for a minute and it just like he's just talking. And like you see him on grounds, and maybe this is all anecdotal and practically meaningless, but like the dude has a smile on his face. He just seems like a happy guy who's bought into UVA. And I think that, you know, that shows as a guy who redshirted and then didn't transfer to, you know, whatever.
All right. Well, there's enough shade from Zach today, and we can move, as he just said, you move on. And so we will move on. We don't know when the news is going to break, so, you know, stay tuned to streakinglaw.com for updates on this portal craziness. And, of course, the high school, we barely mentioned that they had a 5-star on grounds who might reclassify.
Okay.
We're saving it for
saving
next,
it.
Saving
it's the
it
off
for
season.
Next time. Yeah, yeah. Because
more Jay Willie content.
We'll be here throughout the summer. Maybe we'll talk some baseball. Maybe we'll talk some softball. There's still plenty of UVA sports left in the year to go. So plenty to talk about on the blog. But for everybody at the blog and the Speaking the Lawn podcast, I'm Pierce. Go Hoos. We'll be right back.